December 5th, 2001, Dallas, Texas. After boarding a flight from Indianapolis to Los Angeles, 70-year-old Margie Dabney and her husband stop for a layover at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. Before they can make their connecting flight, Margie winds up disappearing, and since she suffers from Alzheimer's disease, there is fear that she became confused and wandered outside the airport. Nearly 7 years later, skeletal remains found in a wooded area 15 miles away are identified as belonging to Margie. Since her cause of death is determined to be blunt force trauma, Margie's case is ruled to be a homicide, but there are no conclusive answers about how she was killed. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and we're going to be exploring a very tragic and bizarre mystery, the 2001 disappearance and subsequent death of Margie Dabney. This coming weekend, I'm going to be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival in Dallas, Texas, and per tradition, whenever I attend one of these podcasting events, I like to cover a case from the host city that very same week. Today's featured story involves an elderly woman named Margie Dabney, who was traveling from Indianapolis to Los Angeles alongside her husband Joe, but somehow wound up disappearing during a layover at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. Since Margie suffered from Alzheimer's disease and Joe was using a wheelchair due to a hip injury, they required an attendant to escort them through the terminal. There are conflicting stories about what actually happened here, but at some point, Margie became separated from her husband and an extensive search failed to find her. Needless to say, disappearing from an airport is quite an unusual occurrence, particularly since this took place in the months following 9/11, when extra security measures were being implemented everywhere. Margie would remain a missing person for years, until her skeletal remains were found in a wooded area 15 miles away, and the autopsy would indicate that she had become the victim of foul play. Of course, this only raised a bunch of unanswered questions. Given her condition, it's possible that Margie became confused and wandered out of the airport, but how did she cross paths with her killer, and what could their motive have been for the crime? You'd think that a missing persons investigation, which took place in one of the busiest airports in the world, would have a lot more evidence to work with, but that is just not the case here, which is why this is such a puzzling mystery. In addition to Margie's story, I'm also going to take a few moments to discuss another cold case involving a victim who vanished from an airport, and that's the 1972 disappearance of 14-year-old Charlotte Loomis. I once wrote a blog post for this case at the website Private Investigations for the Missing, and while there's very little information available, the 50th anniversary of Charlotte's disappearance takes place next week, so I thought now would be a good time to provide her story with some exposure on this episode. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or a review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the unexplained death of Margie Dabney. Our story begins in 2001, and our central figure is Margie Dabney, a 70-year-old African-American woman who goes by the name Margie. For the past 34 years, Margie has been married to her 63-year-old husband, Joe Dabney, a retired taxi driver and construction worker. Margie has a total of 10 children, two of whom she had with Joe, while the other 8 are from her previous marriage. Even though Margie and Joe have spent most of their lives living in Indianapolis, Indiana, the couple decided they wanted to move to California after taking a recent trip there to visit Joe's mother, and they currently reside in an apartment in Bakersfield. But unfortunately, Margie, a tiny woman who is 5'2" and weighs only 95 pounds, has spent the past several years struggling with a number of health issues. She takes medication for high blood pressure and diabetes, though she is not dependent on insulin. However, Margie's biggest issue is that she suffers from Alzheimer's disease, and Joe first became aware of the problem when Margie started getting into a habit of wandering off to nearby hospitals in order to ask for her mother, who is deceased. At one point, a serious crisis took place when Margie became confused and wandered away from a Greyhound bus depot in Bakersfield while Joe was using the restroom. Margie would remain a missing person for the next 3 days until she was finally recovered safely. Joe was also dealing with his own serious health problems as he was involved in a bad traffic accident which left him with constant pain in his hip and required the use of a wheelchair to move around. While Joe was scheduled to undergo hip surgery, he knew that he would be unable to watch over Margie and manage her issues with Alzheimer's while he was recovering. Since none of Margie's children lived in California, a decision was made to have her travel back to Indianapolis and stay with her daughter, Candace Price, while Joe underwent his surgery. However, shortly after she arrived, there was an incident where Margie became confused and slipped out of Candace's house and went to an Indianapolis hospital to search for Joe. After Margie was found, Candace realized that she could not leave her mother alone and decided that she needed to padlock Margie inside her bedroom whenever she went to work. Now, there are conflicting stories about what happened next. Most of the sources state that after Joe underwent his hip surgery, he flew to Indianapolis and met up with Margie again. However, according to a New York Times article published in April of 2002, when Joe learned that Candace was locking Margie inside her bedroom, he decided to cancel his surgery and travel to Indianapolis in order to immediately bring his wife back to California. Whatever the case, their flight home was scheduled to take place on December the 5th, 2001. Early that morning, Candace drove Margie and Joe to Indianapolis International Airport, where they were scheduled to board an American Airlines flight to Los Angeles. Before they arrived, the flight would stop in Texas for a layover at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. At this point, Joe still required a wheelchair to move around, and Margie was wearing a tag which identified her as an Alzheimer's patient, so prior to departure, Candace contacted the airline and asked them to provide the couple with a courtesy escort in order to help them make their flights. Margie and Joe boarded their flight in Indianapolis without incident, and it would arrive at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport at around 10:15 a.m. When the couple exited the plane, they were met inside Terminal A by an attendant employed by Prospect Airport Services, a company contracted by American Airlines to provide assistance to passengers. The attendant would push Joe's wheelchair through the terminal until they arrived at Gate 39 for their connecting flight to Los Angeles, but at some point, they became separated from Margie. However, there are differing accounts about what actually happened. The official story you'll find from most sources is that Margie and Joe both needed to use the restroom, so while the attendant wheeled Joe into the men's room, Margie walked into the ladies' room, and the attendant told her to meet them at the gate. When Joe and the attendant emerged from the men's room a few minutes later, they went to Gate 39, but Margie was not there. When she failed to show up, the attendant got a female employee to check the ladies' room, but Margie was not there either, and she could not be found anywhere in the terminal. Finally, after over an hour of searching, airline workers finally contacted the airport police and their Department of Public Safety in order to report Margie missing. Though a report was not actually filed with the Dallas Police Department until 8:45 p.m., over 10 hours after Margie was last seen. Now, the story provided by Joe is much different and does not involve him using the restroom. Joe would later allege that at some point, he noticed that Margie was not walking alongside them through the terminal, and the attendant told him his wife had gone to the bathroom. Since Margie had a tendency to wander off, Joe became concerned and tried to convince the attendant to stop pushing his wheelchair so they could go look for her. However, Joe said the attendant did not speak much English and kept ignoring him, So Joe kept attempting to apply the wheelchair's brakes and finally used one of his footrests to hit the attendant and get him to stop. This prompted the attendant to call security, who attempted to calm Joe down and threatened to arrest him for assault. Even though Joe told security that his wife was missing, he said that the attendant still wheeled him to gate 39 and used racial slurs in order to bully him into boarding the plane. In the end, Joe did wind up taking the flight, and he was forced to fly to Los Angeles without Margie. We'll go into more details about Joe's allegations later on, but while he was gone, airport personnel performed a full-scale search for Margie on the 18,000-acre property and failed to find her. Even though Margie had been carrying a purse and a shopping bag at the time, her family did not believe she had any money on her. In a decision that was met with criticism, the Department of Public Safety did not inform the media about Margie's disappearance until December the 7th, 2 days after she originally went missing. At one point, tracking dogs were used to follow Margie's scent down a service road which led away from the airport, but they soon lost the scent, suggesting that Margie might have climbed into a vehicle at some point. After Margie's photograph was circulated by the media, eyewitnesses report having seen a woman matching her description walking northbound on that same service road. On the day she went missing, there were also reported eyewitness sightings of Margie walking around on the airport's tarmac. Since this was the area where aircraft are parked and should not be accessible to the general public, airline representatives tried to downplay these sightings. They also declined to publicly confirm if any security cameras had captured footage of Margie walking around or leaving the airport that day. In the end, an extensive search effort failed to turn up any trace of Margie in Dallas or the surrounding area, and no one ever came forward to admit to having picked her up in a vehicle. American Airlines offered a $10,000 reward for information and provided Joe and other members of Margie's family with free flights to Dallas so that they could participate in the search for her. In fact, they also agreed to put her daughter Candace up in a hotel and provide her with a free rental car for an entire month while she scoured the city for her mother and handed out missing persons flyers. Well, in spite of their attempts at damage control, Joe still decided to file a $10 million lawsuit against American Airlines in April of 2002. According to Joe's attorney, the airline had committed gross negligence and incompetence and treated Margie, quote-unquote, worse than luggage. According to Joe, Margie had actually become disoriented during their flight from Indianapolis and tried to open one of the plane's rear doors, so he believed that the airline should have been better prepared to deal with her when they arrived at the airport. Joe continued to maintain that the attendant completely disregarded Margie and was not watching over her while he pushed his wheelchair through the terminal. In fact, the lawsuit alleged that the airline had mistakenly labeled Margie as an unaccompanied minor rather than an Alzheimer's patient in their paperwork. For their part, the airline denied this, claiming that Margie appeared to be lucid when she first arrived in the terminal, and that the attendant may not have known she required assistance, since the tag identifying Margie as an Alzheimer's patient was not visible beneath her coat. They also denied Joe's allegations that he was bullied into boarding the flight to Los Angeles, maintaining that it was his idea, as he supposedly told them that he wasn't concerned about his wife, since she had a habit of wandering off and always turned up safely. However, a passenger who sat next to Joe on the flight seemed to corroborate his story. She said that Joe arrived late, and that in spite of his hip issues, he received no assistance to make it to a seat, and was forced to use the other seats as handrails in order to move through the aisle. After Joe sat down, the passenger said that he appeared to be in complete anguish and expressed constant concern about his missing wife while they flew to Los Angeles. In addition, even though the airline had attempted to discount the eyewitness sightings of Margie walking on the airport tarmac on the day she disappeared, Joe's attorney told the media that the witnesses who saw her were a pilot and a construction worker, so he found them to be credible. Joe would later file a revised lawsuit against American Airlines for $75 million, but in March of 2003, both sides ultimately agreed to reach a settlement for an undisclosed amount. The investigation into Margie's disappearance would remain at a standstill for the next few years, but in November of 2007, the United States Army Corps of Engineers did a controlled burn of a wooded area located just outside of Dallas near Louisville Lake. They wound up uncovering some skeletonized remains, including a human skull, near a dirt road. The remains went unidentified for nearly a year, until the Army Corps of Engineers did another controlled burn of an area below the Louisville Lake Dam in October of 2008. This time, they wound up uncovering some clothing and some items which bore Margie Dabney's name, including a bus pass, an American Association of Retired Persons card, and a tag from American Airlines. Since this location was in close proximity to the spot where the remains had been found, and about 15 miles northwest of Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, this opened up the possibility that the victim was Margie. Well, sure enough, after the authorities contacted Margie's relatives and asked them to provide a DNA sample, the remains were positively identified as belonging to her. When a medical examiner performed an autopsy on the remains, he determined that Margie's exact cause of death was blunt force trauma. The fractures to Margie's skull seemed to indicate that she had either been struck or shot in the head, so it was concluded that she was the victim of foul play. However, the medical examiner was unable to determine when exactly Margie's death took place, or she was killed at the same location where she was found. Joe and the rest of Margie's family were left in complete disbelief by the discovery of her remains. For years, Candace had held out hope that someone had found her mother while she was disoriented and was caring for her, so it was devastating to learn that she had been murdered. Since Margie's remains were found in Denton County, the homicide investigation would be under the jurisdiction of the Louisville Police Department rather than the Dallas Police Department. The Louisville PD were provided with surveillance videos from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport from the day Margie went missing, and publicly confirmed that they could not see Margie or Joe in any of the footage. Investigators also stated that they received tollgate records which showed the license plate numbers of all vehicles that entered and left the airport that day, but they acknowledged that the records were not in good shape. Unfortunately, the Louisville PD have been unable to turn up any substantial new leads since the discovery of Margie's remains, so the actual circumstances of how she disappeared from the airport and wound up dead continue to remain an unsolved mystery. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So if you were to put together a list of locations where it seemed very unlikely that a victim could go missing and wind up dead under suspicious circumstances, an airport would be ranked right near the very top. That particularly rings true for Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, because at the time Margie Dabney disappeared, it was considered to be the third busiest airport in the world, and an average of 164,000 travelers passed through there every day. Yes, it's very plausible that a woman suffering from Alzheimer's disease would become disoriented and wander out of the airport, but how can there be so little evidence to work with? How is it possible that Margie did not show up on any surveillance footage, particularly since she went missing just under 3 months after 9/11, when airport security was a very serious issue? Given the circumstances, you can understand why Margie's husband Joe filed a lawsuit against American Airlines, but since both sides reached a settlement, and specific details about the suit have never been released publicly, we may never know how much liability and responsibility the airline might have had. But you get the sense that there's some missing pieces to this story. But before we talk more about Margie's case, I want to discuss the other case I mentioned in the intro, and that's the 1972 disappearance of 14-year-old Charlotte Loomis. Long story short, back in 2019, I was asked to write a blog post on a missing persons case for the website Private Investigations for the Missing, a nonprofit organization that provides investigative services for the loved ones of missing people. I decided to select Charlotte Loomis's disappearance because I once came across her profile page at the Doe Network and was intrigued by the details, but there was so little information available about this case that there's no way I could do an entire podcast episode about it. However, since it has a few parallels to Margie Dabney's disappearance, I thought it was worth talking about here, especially since the case's 50th anniversary is right around the corner. During the summer of 1972, Charlotte lived with her family in Michigan, but she decided to take a trip to New Jersey to visit her sister Carol and brother-in-law, who was stationed at the Army installation Fort Monmouth near Eatontown. On September the 1st, Charlotte traveled to Newark International Airport and was supposed to board a flight back home to Midland Bay Saginaw International Airport. But even though Charlotte's luggage arrived at its destination, Charlotte herself did not. And unfortunately, at the time I wrote that blog post, these were literally the only hard facts I had. However, I've since heard from someone connected to this case who was able to shed some additional light on what happened here. Charla was driven to Newark International Airport by her sister Carol, who accompanied her to the gate to wait for her flight. At some point, Carol went to use the restroom, and when she returned, Charlotte was gone. Since the passengers had already started boarding the flight, Carol just assumed that Charlotte got on the plane. Of course, Charlotte never arrived at her destination, but it sounds like she did check in her luggage beforehand, which is why it wound up on the flight. So it seems like something happened to Charlotte while her sister was in the restroom, but even though all the other passengers were questioned, none of them recalled seeing Charlotte after they left the waiting area. It seems very unlikely that Charlotte could have been abducted by force with so many witnesses around, so she either left the airport of her own volition, or an unknown party somehow convinced Charlotte to leave with them. Without more information, I really have no clue what could have happened to Charlotte, but you can see the parallels with Margie Dabney's disappearance, as both these cases involved victims going missing from an airport while their loved one was in the restroom. Of course, the key difference is that back in 1972, people could wander a lot more freely through airports, and outsiders were allowed to accompany passengers to the gate to wait for their flights. This is what happened with Charlotte and Carol, so it's not impossible that someone could have approached Charlotte in the waiting area and did something to cause her to disappear. But ever since the tragic events of 9/11, the only way you can pass through security and make it to one of the gates is if you are boarding a flight, or if you're an airport employee or flight crew member. So if someone took advantage of Margie and decided to harm her, this likely would have taken place after she made it out of the restricted area. Now, we have two different stories about how Margie became separated from her husband, as she either disappeared after Joe went to use the restroom, or she went to the restroom on her own while they were passing through the terminal, and since Joe was trapped in his wheelchair and the attendant would not listen to him, he was powerless to go after her. Well, I can't say for certain which version is true. There are a number of reasons to put more stock into Joe's account. For starters, Joe had previously gone through a frightening incident where Margie wandered away from a bus station while he was using the restroom, and he was unable to find her for 3 days. So I think he would have been reluctant to go into the airport restroom and leave Margie unattended, or allow her to go to the restroom on her own, particularly since she had already shown symptoms of her Alzheimer's by attempting to open one of the plane's doors on their flight from Indianapolis. Given the circumstances, the airline should have had a female employee accompany Margie inside the restroom, or at the very least, keep a constant eye on the doorway to assure she didn't walk out and wander off. The allegations that Joe was bullied into boarding his flight to Los Angeles and a racial slur was used in his presence is also pretty disturbing. It's worth noting that when Joe filed his lawsuit against American Airlines, two of Margie's daughters decided to hire the services of the Cochran firm, which was founded by none other than Johnny Cochran, who gained national prominence after representing O.J. Simpson at his murder trial. It sounds like the firm didn't do much more than provide Margie's daughter with legal advice and help them distribute missing persons flyers, but the allegation about the racial slur may have captured Cochran's attention, at least until Joe decided to settle with the airline. I have a hard time believing the airline story that Joe made the decision to board the flight himself because he figured his wife would turn out fine, particularly since the passenger who sat next to Joe went on the record to confirm that he seemed legitimately distressed. Remember, Margie had previously gone missing for 3 days, and it was pure luck that she was found unharmed, so I'm sure Joe would have been extra concerned about her potentially wandering off into a strange city. You would think that if a passenger's wife had gone missing in an airport terminal, the airline would have gone out of their way to accommodate him and rebook him on a later flight after his wife was found, but the fact that they seemed to want to get rid of Joe as quickly as possible is a major red flag. I would like to think that their actions were the result of apathy or incompetence, but part of me wonders if there's something more sinister here. On the one hand, American Airlines did seem to go into full damage control mode when this case started generating publicity, as they covered travel expenses for Margie's family when they came to Dallas to search for her. But on the other hand, how could something like this happen in such a large airport to begin with? Following Margie's disappearance, the airline would not confirm if she was captured by security cameras inside or outside the airport on the day she went missing. It was not until Margie's remains were found years later, and the case became a homicide investigation when the Louisville Police Department finally announced that the airport turned over the surveillance videos from that day, and Margie and Joe could not be seen in any of them. And I find that pretty troubling. You would think that an airport would be the one place which had a ton of security cameras, and I have a hard time believing that they didn't capture any footage of Margie, particularly if she managed to wander her way outside. I know that 7 years had passed by this point, so does this mean that someone who worked there might have erased some incriminating footage? Well, when Joe originally filed his lawsuit, his attorney actually expressed his belief that an airport employee might have been involved in Margie's disappearance. But if that's not the case, perhaps the alternate explanation is that Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport just wasn't as secure as they made themselves out to be. Once again, this was only a few months removed from 9/11, when airports everywhere were supposed to be taking additional security precautions, and I'm sure it wouldn't have looked good for them if a 70-year-old woman somehow managed to wander off their property undetected. If something like that can happen, then how can you give off the impression that you'll be able to prevent another terrorist attack? I think it's pretty telling that the airline went into full denial mode when reports started surfacing that Margie had been seen walking on the airport's tarmac. However, it later came out that the witnesses who supposedly saw her were a pilot and a construction worker, two employees whom I don't think would have much motive to lie about seeing an elderly woman wandering through a restricted area. One interesting theory I've seen in online discussions about this case is that Margie could have been seriously injured or killed when she wandered onto a section of the airport property she wasn't supposed to be, so the responsible parties decided to dispose of her body in order to avoid potential liability issues. Margie's exact cause of death was blunt force trauma to the head, and I've always wondered if the medical examiner was able to tell the difference between an intentional act of violence or an accidental fall which injured her head. However, since Margie's death was officially ruled to be a homicide, then I'm guessing that the evidence suggested she was either shot or struck by a blunt instrument. Whatever happened to Margie, we now have to figure out how she wound up in a wooded area located 15 miles from the airport. The medical examiner was unable to determine if Margie was killed at the location or if it was just a dumping ground for her body, and they could also not figure out when she was killed. For all we know, Margie could have been alive for a period of time after she disappeared from the airport. Even though she suffered from Alzheimer's disease, it does not sound like there was much physically wrong with Margie, so yes, she theoretically could have traveled to that area on her own. However, the condition of her skull rules out the possibility of her dying of exposure, so someone else had to be complicit in her death. We know that tracking dogs followed Margie's scent along a service road outside the airport before it came to an abrupt halt, suggesting that she climbed into a vehicle. And while tracking dogs are never 100% reliable, we do have eyewitnesses who reported seeing a woman matching Margie's description walking along that same road. The big issue is trying to figure out a potential motive for why someone would want to murder a helpless, 95-pound, 7-year-old woman. Margie was not believed to be carrying any money or valuables on her at the time she disappeared, so I suppose someone could have attempted to rob her and took out the rage when they found out she wasn't carrying anything. And yes, because Margie was black, I suppose we can't discount the possibility that this was a hate crime. Of course, sometimes people will decide to commit murder for no reason. What are the odds of running into someone like that at an airport? Obviously, airports do not seem like the ideal place for a serial killer to pick up a random victim, because you run the risk of being seen by witnesses or captured by security cameras. So it would be amazingly bad luck if a person like that just happened to come across Margie walking alone down a service road. Talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. This is why I've always been intrigued by the statement from Joe's attorney that an airport employee might have been responsible for Margie's disappearance. I have no idea if he was privy to specific information which made him believe that, but that theory would make sense. If an employee noticed a confused, disoriented woman wandering around, particularly in restricted areas like the tarmac, they may have decided to use their position of authority to take advantage of the situation. While this is all just speculation on my part, it could go a long way towards explaining how Margie made it off the airport property undetected and why no surveillance footage of her from that day seems to exist. But remember, even if someone did pick up Margie at the airport and gave her a ride, that doesn't necessarily mean this person killed her. For all we know, the motorist could have dropped Margie off at another location, and she eventually crossed paths with another individual who was responsible for her death. It seems like with most of the prior incidents where Margie wandered off, she got it into her head to visit a hospital. She did so in California, and while staying with her daughter in Indianapolis, so even though Dallas was a completely foreign city to her, she may have gotten into her head to go to the nearest hospital. If someone did give Margie a ride and dropped her off somewhere, they have never come forward, as they may not even be aware of what happened to her. Or they are aware, but fear that the crime might be pinned on them, even if they're completely innocent. Another potential explanation is that someone may have picked up Margie without any intention of harming her, but if her Alzheimer's caused her to become unruly, things might have escalated into a confrontation which led to her being killed, and the responsible party panicked and disposed of her body. Whatever happened, there's so much about this case which doesn't make any sense, and since there's very little evidence to work with, I can see why the Louisville Police Department has not made any progress in the investigation these past 14 years. Given the condition of Margie's skeletal remains, I get the impression that they don't have any DNA evidence, which is what they might need to link this crime to a perpetrator. But if this was an act of premeditated murder, I have to wonder if the killer has harmed other victims or committed additional crimes, because anyone who would do something like this to a frail elderly woman is capable of anything. The whole situation is just a major tragedy, because Margie never should have found herself in a position to be harmed like this in the first place, and I think that American Airlines and the staff at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport dropped the ball in a huge way. I still cannot fathom how in December of 2001, a person could vanish from one of the busiest airports in the world and nothing was captured by any of the security cameras. I think that if the airline had taken Joe's concerns more seriously at the beginning, then perhaps Margie would have been found before she wandered outside. While it's certainly possible that Margie crossed paths with a random stranger who did her harm, part of me wonders if there is still more to this story, and if some sort of cover-up took place, which is preventing Margie's loved ones from finding out the truth. I definitely feel immense sympathy for Joe Dabney, as being forced onto a flight back home after having your wife go missing sounds pretty devastating. I think Joe was hoping that by the time he landed, Margie would have been found wandering inside the airport somewhere, but sadly, that was not to be the case. Reading some of the articles which were published in the months following Margie's disappearance is pretty heartbreaking, as a number of them feature a photograph of Joe sitting alone in his wheelchair on his porch in Bakersfield, and he states that he has still not opened and unpacked their luggage from their final flight together because it is too painful for him to do so. I have no idea if Joe is still alive today, but I hope he still managed to attain some sort of peace and happiness these past two decades. While I'm glad that Margie's family was able to recover her remains and give her a proper burial, I'm sure it was no comfort to know that she had been murdered, and the circumstances of how she was found raise a lot more questions than answers. It's possible that the only way this case might be solved is if the right person comes forward. So if you happen to have any information about the disappearance of Margie Dabney, please contact the Louisville Police Department at 972-219-3640. That's 972-219-3640. Or if you would like to submit an anonymous tip, you can call the Denton County Crime Stoppers tip line at 1-800-388-TIPS. That's 1-800-388-8477. Also, if you happen to have any information about the 1972 disappearance of Charlotte Loomis, please contact the Eatontown, New Jersey Police Department at 732-389-7649. That's 732-389-7649. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. This past month, I released a bonus episode about the 1970 murder of 18-year-old Joanne Weigel and the subsequent disappearance of her 18-year-old high school sweetheart, Mike Klein, who became a wanted fugitive before he could be arrested for the crime and has not been seen for over 50 years. In addition, I've dropped an exclusive bonus episode from my spin-off podcast, The Path Went Chilly, in which myself and my two co-hosts, Jules and Ashley, cover yet another case from Unsolved Mysteries, the 1988 murder of Philip Fraser. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Brent E., Julie M., and Chana D. Thank you all so much for your support. And before I bring this episode to a close, I'd like to play a promo for the podcast I'll be doing a panel session with this weekend at the True Crime Podcast Festival, Shockingly Wicked.
Hey, I'm Brianna.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are the hosts for Shockingly Wicked, a True Crime Podcast.
If you're tired of hearing about the same old cases and you like witty, dark humor in an unscripted fashion, you can give us a listen on any platform where you can find podcasts.
We release in seasons to make sure you get a chance to catch up on all the true crime goodness. During the season, we release episodes every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Come hang out with us on Facebook or Patreon, where we have private discussion groups or a Discord channel benefit for our highest tier. Or you can meet us in person in Dallas at the end of August at the True Crime Podcast Festival.
You can find all of our social media and all things Shockingly Wicked podcasts at our website, shockinglywicked.com. We hope to see you soon.
I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to Miguel Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Anyway, in an ironic turn of events, I'm going to be touching down at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport on the very same morning this episode is released. That's because I'll be appearing at the True Crime Podcast Festival later this weekend, and I just wanted to provide another reminder that at 9:15 a.m. on the morning of Sunday, August the 28th, I'm going to be participating in a panel session with the podcast Shockingly Wicked, in which we discuss Unsolved Mysteries. I'll even be screening a copy of my little scene video titled The Unsolved Mysteries Fanatic, which was made about 3 years before we launched The Trail Went Cold, and was our early attempt to turn this concept into a YouTube series before we ultimately turned it into a podcast. It features me doing my best or worst Robert Stack impression, and not a lot of people have seen this video, but if you attend my session at the True Crime Podcast Festival, you will get an exclusive screening. Anyway, I do hope to see some of you listeners there this weekend, and feel free to come over to my table on Podcast Row and say hi to me. Otherwise, have yourselves a great week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶